Absolutely.
My name is Connor. I'd first like to acknowledge everyone that worked on this project, Constance, Johan, and Luca Brillante, and plus many others. So we looked at different applied water amounts and timing of leaf removal in Cabernet, which is a grape cultivar in the Napa's Oakville AVA. So we do need a suite of canopy management practices to make a viable crop. So this starts with dormant pruning, and then there's also green season practices such as shoot removal and leaf removal. And then some of the plant secondary metabolites may benefit from additional exposure to sun. In Jose's mechanistic work, when they compared leaf removal versus no leaf removal, they had seen benefits of anthocyanin concentration in the berries at harvest time. But we mostly deal with exposed leaf area and grapevine canopies. They do drive carbon dioxide assimilation, which will, give itself to ripening. And then, of course, some of these yield precursors that we may monitor. How the canopy microclimate is manipulated will depend on how the fruit composition responds, and then how we can avoid fungal infection incidents. But most of our irrigation requirements will be driven by the leaf area or the shaded cast on the floor, because that's how evapotranspiration is driven. So solar radiation drives evapotranspiration, and then as an added effect, you get a shift in ambient temperatures, which might drop down vapor pressure deficits. So the time of day, if you were to track it with a pyranometer, this is how the curve looks. It will increase to a max, and then it will decline as the solar radiation goes down. Likewise, the evapotranspiration of the vine, if you were to measure in gallons per hour, it might reach almost up to 1.5 gallons per hour of transpiration at its peak. But water use declines with soil water depletion. The figure on your left has the soil water content at all depths, and the figure on your y-axis is the ratio of crop evapotranspiration to reference evapotranspiration. So as soil water is depleted, the ratio also is declining. The figure on your right is a midday leaf water potential in megapascals, regressed onto a day of year, as different amounts of water applied at 120%, 80%, and 40% of crop demand. As the season wears on, the stem water potential also declines. Of course, water deficits affect grapevine physiology. We do see a higher abscisic acid accumulation and also more solute accumulation. But as you decrease applied water amounts, photosynthesis, stomatal conductance, protein synthesis, wall synthesis, and also cell expansion also is decreased. Water deficits also affect secondary metabolism. When we look at the flavonoid pathway, we have two parallel downstream pathways. The flavonoids can be 3,4 hydroxylated or 3,4,5 hydroxylated. And as water deficits are introduced into these systems and mechanistic systems, the trihydroxylated amounts on trihydroxylated forms on your right are going to be upregulated. But we have a little information on how the proanthocyanidins, or for lack of a better term, condensed tannins respond to these deficits. So we have done a lot of work in the hot climate previously, looking at timing of leaf removal and different applied water amounts. We were mostly seeing a response in the concentration of the plant secondary metabolites, not too many effects on the primary metabolism. So when we set up this study, we wanted to see the ideal timing for the north coast of California, which can be a little bit cooler than the San Joaquin Valley, and then we wanted to see how these different applied water amounts would affect. The study was conducted at our experiment station. It's a Bale Loma soil series. It's kind of a heavier soil. The vineyards, of course, are drip irrigated. And we have roughly about 2,083 vines to the hectare. The trellis system we could not change. It's a shoot position, but a sprawling system that has three tiers. So the VSP is actually separated roughly at like 60 degrees from side to side. So we monitored primary and secondary metabolites. We looked at the canopy, plant water status, gas exchange of the leaves, yield components, and berry chemistry. In the secondary metabolites, we looked at three classes of compounds, flavonols, anthocyanins, and tannins. So looking at the results, we used to say that, Napa Valley is a little bit cooler, but, we're seeing that it's getting, much, much warmer. The figure on your left is looking at the displaying precipitation and number of clear sky days from the 1st of April. And then we are seeing that clear sky days are increasing. The figure on your right is the ambient temperature, and we're subjected to these extreme heat spikes that are coming on later on in the season, right around Labor Day, where temperatures can exceed 45 degrees Celsius for many, many days. So here's a look at the estimated crop coefficient of these vineyards and applied water amounts. Our estimated crop coefficient increased up to a maximum of roughly around 0.5. The amount of water we applied ranged from about 1,800 liters to about 470 liters per plant. So to put it into a larger context, we're applying between 3 megaliters to about 0.75 megaliters per hectare throughout the season. Plant water status responds very well to these deficits. We start seeing the treatments separate roughly around the 25th of July, right around Verizon. And as you can see, 25% of ET crop, 50% of ET crop respond almost linearly to these deficits when we look at stem water potential. Conversely, we do not see leaf removal treatments having an effect on the plant water status. The canopy microclimate responds, but it responds only to the leaf removal treatments. When we looked at a number of leaf contacts on the morning side versus on the afternoon side, of course, when we remove leaves, we're going to see less leaf layers on the side that we remove the leaves on. However, irrigation treatments did not affect it, so I'm not showing it. These are the cluster contacts on your right on the right-hand side figure. As we remove leaves, we're contacting more clusters. So this is kind of a check to see if the treatments work. However, as you remove leaves, the plant keeps growing in the warm and hot climates. This is the vegetative compensation of canopy at harvest. The control vines, the weight of laterals prior to harvest was the highest, likewise as the pre-bloom leaf removal treatments. So these canopies closed slowly right around harvest time. The post-fruit set, the leaves were removed about 400 growing degree days later, so they did not close as fast as the other treatments that we monitored. Looking at berry mass development, we did not see any effects of leaf removal on berry mass development. They essentially ended up being the same. Conversely, the irrigation treatments had a tremendous effect, and then they ended up separating even at harvest time, where we had the largest berry size with 100% ET crop treatment. When we look at net gas exchange, On your left is a stomatal conductance. Of course, 100% ET crowd treatment had the greatest stomatal conductance, and this continued on throughout the season. But as the season came closer to an end, the 25% ET crowd treatments were rushing to catch up to the other treatments. When we look at net photosynthesis, they were quite separate throughout the rest of the throughout the earlier portion of the season, but at our harvest time, we had no statistical difference in these, and we did not have an effect of leaf removal on the gas exchange. Components of yield, I'm showing berry mass as affected by irrigation treatments. Berry skin mass was not different. Cluster mass was different. We do not see a difference in a number of berries per cluster. And then, of course, yield expressed here as tons per hectare are different. But the interesting point here is that there's no difference between 50% and 100% ET crop irrigation replacement. They essentially replaced the yielded the same. Leaf removal had no effect on components of yield. When we look at vine balance, in this case I'm showing the Ravaz index, which is a kg of fruit yield to pruning mass. This is the only place where we had a significant interaction with leaf removal and irrigation treatments. The control treatments almost showed a quadratic trend, but when we look at pre-bloom, irrigated in increasing amounts of water, we're seeing the Ravaz index increase there. Post-fruits at leaf removal, as we increase the amount of water, we're seeing a declining trend. Looking at berry chemistry, none of the treatments had any appreciable effect on pH and titratable acidity. We are seeing an effect on total soluble solids with irrigation. We're seeing a higher accumulation of total soluble solids at the end of the season with our 100% and 50% ET crop treatment. On your right-hand side is leaf removal, where there's no effect. Here's anthocyanin content and concentration at harvest. When we express total anthocyanin as a milligram per berry, I do not have any effect of these treatments. When I express it as anthocyanins, milligrams per gram of fresh mass, I do see an effect of irrigation where, you know, decreasing the applied water amounts concentrated the total anthocyanins. Leaf removal in this case had no effect. Here's the kinetic development of total anthocyanin concentration. We do reach a peak when the berries are at their largest size, and then they degrade. But here I'm showing the same effect. We have the highest amount of anthocyanins here with a 25% ET crop. Hydroxylation of ratio of anthocyanins follows the same trend with 50% and 25% having the highest hydroxylation ratio. This is the regression of bricks versus total anthocyanins. The peak is reached at 22 bricks, after which point anthocyanins degrade, since there's a mechanistic relationship between these two. Flavonols, we did have a biosynthesis effect here with leaf removal. We do see a higher flavonol content with post-fruits at leaf removal, where irrigation had no effect. Here's their kinetic development, where irrigation has no effect, and we have the highest effect with reduced water amounts. And proanthocyanin, tannins, here's another guy telling you that, you know, irrigation does not affect these. And then leaf removal, depending on where you are, might have an effect, but not in Napa. Here's their composition, where a mean degree of polymerization was not affected. Looking forward, we have little to no cloud cover. We get intermittent heat spikes. We have a general warming trend, and there's no increase in precipitation supply. Johan Martinez made these growing degree days for the last 100 years. We're approaching, you know, almost 2,000 growing degree days in Napa. When Winkler Index was made in 1944, we were roughly around 1,200 growing degree days. So, We're shifting towards a position that our sprawling system, the UC Davis 30 trellis, splits the canopy, although it's still positioned. It's a sprawling system where you can shift the buried temperatures from side to side if your rows are running east-west. We had literally no effect of leaf removal. There's a lot of reports coming from cool climates. We do not see any effect on our berry set. We reported this previously. Applied water amounts are more important than warmer climates. When we look at it, applied water amounts do have an indirect effect on the secondary metabolites. When we look at our leaf removal, we do not have much of an effect on any of the desirable compounds that we normally look at. So cluster microclimate in the new trellising systems is already optimized. An optimal ET replacement is about 50 to 60%, about 20% lower than previously reported. Although not as impactful, there's still an interest from the growers to understand the impact of leaf removal practices on the vine physiology, but we do not see much of a benefit in California. And I'd like to acknowledge the funding sources and all the students that worked on this project.